Welcome to the Aries Working Group call for February 19th. This is the off week for the morning call, so that will be next week. And we are we'll have a good call today. Please mind the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the antitrust policy. Let's get along and avoid encumbering our work with anything that would prevent its use. Any introductions today? I think I recognize about everybody. Okay, any announcements? I don't have any. Should we have any? What announcements ought to be here that aren't yet? I'm about to start putting IW on the list.
We should make sure folks know about the Hyperledger Global Forum if they aren't aware of that. That's coming up soon. I think most of the early registration things lapsed, so that's our bad if we haven't been announcing in this meeting previously. I know there's a bunch of folks from the Aries community that are going to be giving demos and tutorials and other cool stuff there at the Global Forum.
It has come up, but it hasn't been in the announcements list, so we will add that. And I'll dig up the IW dates as well. If you haven't been to an IW before, it's a great time. Lots of related work goes on. And it's the most minute for benefit, the highest value conference I've ever attended. Related meetings review. We can pull off the face-to-face. I'll mention in the DIDCOM working group, we've been talking a lot about routing and what goes in the DIDDoc, et cetera, as we're formulating some of our first pass through some of those ideas, building on the stuff that we've done here. So that's progressing well. Any other meetings that we need to review?
I can give a brief update from the semantics group. I got Mark Lazar from Kantara to go over the consent receipt version 2. That was really cool seeing that roadmap. And then Robert demonstrated basically the overlays capture architecture, and we saw some of the overlays on the application layer. He's basically tweaked the Aries toolbox so that it exposes the application layer. So that was really nice to see.
Very cool. And we're going to see a modified version of that demo today. Robert's volunteered to demonstrate that and has a couple of interesting points for our group. So excellent. Thank you, Paul. Any other meetings? Okay, let's quickly go through work updates. And this may be a little bit light. I see that the Aries Cloud Agent Python has 0.42 released. Steve, you want to cover that?
As soon as I can find a mute button. 4.2 contains the 4.1 and 4.2 contain the forward message change that will be cause fun with other implementations. So we'll be deploying, it looks like this Friday, we're going to deploy it with street cred so that all our demos continue to work. 4.3 is in the works. We put in a ledger read-only mode, so we're finding a good pattern is to do your ledger writes kind of in a separate process or a separate mechanism, and then when you're operational to run it in read-only mode. So we added an explicit read-only mode so you can't no writes go to the ledger in that mode. We've also taken the first step in the transition from DID to HTTP message types and an improved Swagger demo. So those are the things in there.
Excellent. Thank you. Framework go.
Continuing on from last week, we're basically cleaning up the WebAssembly and JavaScript integration.
Very cool. And we skipped over Aries Shared. Any Aries Shared news?
Apologize, I'm late. But I heard you ask about Aries Shared news. The update from 2 weeks ago is the current update. We've been focused on other tasks. I don't know what Stephen Curran's team has to report, though.
Yeah, I was just going to say Andrew's here, but Andrew's been wrapping up his work on VDR, Indie VDR, building it into a release of Vaughn Network. So in future, we'll be running Vaughn Network without any Indie SDK component. And that's probably ready to go get pushed into Hyperledger shortly. Anything you want to add, Andrew? We're both here.
Python wrapper is looking pretty good. Started adding some code coverage analysis. Still very light on unit tests, and still need to figure out automatic like wheel packaging for Python. But it's a good start.
Yep. And Andrew is now starting on IndieCredX. And we're meeting with Mike tomorrow to talk about it.
Awesome. Cool. And anything on the test suite, Daniel?
Nothing new on the test suite this week. Just a reminder, I suppose, that we have issue credential and present proof tests in there. So if you'd like to see how you're comparing at least to what the test suite has currently, that's available.
Cool. Jack Ruby?
No change since last week. I did have a good conversation with Johnny Holt today about doing a demo with our work on the IEEE 2418.6, doing a demo with the schema work he has for vaccinations there. So that's what I'm going to be using and expanding on that Rails demo.
Very, very cool. Thank you. I'm going to skip the toolbox because we're going to get a demo a little bit from Daniel on updated stuff there, and including updated readmes and demos or Docker containers. So that's helpful. Any other work updates before we go along with our agenda? I'm seeing Ursa being updated. Or is that an accident?
One item, apologies, I missed it earlier. We're having a special session of the Indie Contributors Call next Tuesday, the 25th, to talk about supporting Indie networks. So anybody who has an Indie network, that we've got created some documentation to help people and are going to provide some assistance there.
Can you add a link up in the announcement section?
Yeah.
Can you get a second, Richard? Thank you.
So there is some update to the rich schema effort. There is a common hype and a corresponding RFC that have been added by Alexander Shcherbakov, and that's being pushed forward. And we're also making progress on some of the other hypes.
Awesome. Thank you, Ken. All right. On our agenda today, we're going to play the issue game. And then we have an Aries Toolbox demo with some a quick review of the new stuff there. And then the Robert's going to give us an adapted demo that he gave on the other call where they show an adaptation of the toolbox, which is really cool. And then some stuff that will prompt some conversation about data store integration. And after that, I would like to, it's been a while since we've done this, I would like to have a little bit of a community feedback section where we solicit open conversation about what we ought to be doing and focusing on as a community, including the right topics to have in our calls to be able to promote that sort of work. So be thinking about that, and we'll get to that later. Is there anything on the agenda that shouldn't be? Or is there anything that's not on the agenda that should be? Or the other way? Okay, let's launch into the issue game. The first one that I've got picked this is issue 324. It has to do with the timing decorator and what to do if some fields are not supported. This is opened by Stephen Curran and with the question and then an answer by Daniel Hardman. That was back in November. Any updates to this issue?
It has long been on my list to update the RFC with Daniel's clarification, so I should be assigned to it, and I'll close it And I'll hope to do that this week. Thank you for awesome. The reminder.
Yeah, no worries. I would like to mention that partially because we finally, you know, moved the DIDCOM issue related issues over to that working group, but we actually have, we're down to one page, and a number of these have people assigned. There's a number of them that deal with the Trust Over IP RFC that have Drummond assigned, et cetera. And so if there's someone assigned to it, I tend to actually not worry as much about it because of that. So anyway, that is really good. So next one is this lonely post by you, Stephen. This is 335, talking about the use of DIDCOM in the interop test suite. And you you are recommending a change to an RFC. Any updates about this? And the 270 was written by Daniel Hardman, who unfortunately is not with us here today. But Daniel Bloom, I was wondering if you might have some commentary on this, or you, Stephen.
Yeah, so I put it in just because we didn't want the back channel to be a requirement that it use DIDCOM. Basically, that's all this is saying. So many words, but that's all it says. We'd like to that the back channel can be HTTP, for example.
Daniel, you came off mute. How does this relate to the way the back channel stuff is currently done in the test suite?
So in code currently, we basically are following Stephen's recommendation. And a lot of the motivation there was basically to defer / postpone any of the decision-making on exactly what the back channel looks like. If we make a very specific recommendation on what it must look like. So I'm feeling like the RFC could use an update, I suppose. But I'm not exactly sure what we would change at this point, since we're kind of in an exploratory phase of what back channels should be.
So I've assigned Daniel, and I think that this concept is good in the fact that it's not represented in the RFC. I'll let Daniel know that I've assigned him here. And what we might be able to get away with to capture this is to amend the RFC with a discussion or a comment in the RFC itself. And that way, anyone who reads the RFC runs into it. So we don't have to come up to some definitive answer necessarily, but just represent sort of the ongoing thinking there. So I will go ahead and let Daniel know that I've assigned him, and we'll seek that resolution. Okay, the next one is 336. And this is starting the protocol, and it's talking about the issue credential protocol from a request credential message. This has a number of comments on it and ends up with that's a good question from Stephen. This there's an inconsistency in the RFC about how to actually adapt this. Commentary, anyone?
I mean, the challenge for me on this one is that we went out of our way to hide the indie stuff and attachments except in, I think it's offer where we, or maybe it's, or I think it's actually proposal where we actually reference a schema ID and a credential cred def ID and basically indie specific things, which is probably incorrect. And
so
then we did
moving those to more of an attachment, for example, would avoid that problem because you could have a different type.
Exactly. It's something that I think we missed on the first round. And then when we did 1.1, we actually added more indie specific fields to it, which didn't really make it any worse. But it didn't solve to me what the kind of core issue. I don't think, I don't know how big a deal it is, but that's sort of my feeling on it.
So it seems like this is a good topic for a potential 1.2 of the protocol that could, rearrange it a little bit to avoid the indie specificness of that flow.
Yep.
So what do we do about this? Is anyone working on a 1.2, or are there other things that ought to be included in a 1.2 this could be combined with? I wonder if we could, without having to start a 1.2 now, if we could capture this, now that we've discovered this and identified, you know, clearly, if we could end up amending with a note at the bottom of the of 1.1 that highlights this issue and marks it for future work.
That's a good idea. I like that. Yeah.
Okay. So I will... do we have any volunteers that want to suggest that and make a PR for an RFC update?
I could do that.
Is anyone else? I know Stephen will. Okay, Stephen, I think it's you. And I appreciate that. That will help us because I don't want to lose the learning here, but it's kind of a dead issue in that it's going to be maybe a little while before we get to a 1.2 and a good time to fix this. It depends on the motivations and what people are working on, but I don't want to lose it. Okay. My last one may not be able to be trivially solved. There's 44 comments on this one. Tobias initially looked up this, and this is a little bit convoluted because we ended up talking about this at the Connectathon in December. This was started in August. And we talked a lot about DidKey and the ups and downs there, et cetera. And the conversations continued at the Connectathon. And so we have talked about this in a previous working group call. Then at the Connectathon, and then we sort of don't have a super good resolution to this. So we're not just going to close this, but what's the next step for this particular RFC? Or this particular issue, sorry.
I obviously, this is quite highly related to what we're working on in the DidCom working group at DIF as well. So I'm cautious of making sure we keep the... thinking synced up there. My opinion in general is that, you know, if we are like, which is described pretty in detail throughout this issue,
right,
hasn't really changed. I think, you know, based on related efforts around other parts of the community, there's a kind of a pattern emerging around using DID URLs for key identifiers. And so I'm not really sure what next steps would be in regards to this issue, but we will be working on it in the DIDCOM working group, and some of the stuff that I'm preparing around the JWM work will propose a solution that can be batted around.
So I'm gonna add DIDCOM related here. Because I think your assessment is good there. Let me think about how to reference this in an issue on the other side, because it might just be picked up and taken care of automatically by the development of the JWM stuff and the et cetera, the other stuff that we talk about. So I'll transfer this and make an issue on the other side so that we can preserve the history in the note that's happening. Perfect. Okay, that's the end of the issue game. Thanks for playing. And then what I'd like to now is Daniel Bloom has to go in just a minute, but I'd love to turn over some time to him to give us a quick demo of the recent stuff added there. Some of it is more functionality based. Some of it has to do with how it actually runs. So let me knock off the sharing, Daniel, and pass that over to you.
All right. Okay. I assume you can hear me and see my screen.
We can.
Okay. So I first figured I'd just highlight a couple of changes that we've made recently to a couple of demo setups that we have inside of the Aries ACOPI plugin toolbox repository. And this is, for those who are unaware, a plugin for Aries Cloud Agent Python that allows that particular agent to interact with the Aries toolbox. So previously we had not done a very good job of treating the demos, demo Docker setups that we have, but we've now added some more info on how to run those. Specifically that there's a single agent demo and there's also a two agent demo where you can kind of have an Alice and Bob agent running and be able to connect to the both of them and show interactions between the two Dockerized, containerized, whatever agents. And that's what I'm gonna be using to demonstrate some of the functionality that we've added in recently. So here I have those two Dockers running. Go ahead and copy and paste the invites in. Almost lost it, okay. So we've got an Alice and a Bob agent. So as a very brief review, these protocols, these items here in this list are actually, this list is populated by the features reported by the Discover Features protocol of the agent. Because we have, admin dids, we have this did item and we can manage dids on the agent and so on for the rest of these different options, invitations, connections, and all that stuff. So paint a little bit better picture of what's going to be happening in this next interaction that I'm going to demo to you, I've prepared just a couple of quick diagrams to show the interaction, I suppose. So on the left side, we've got Alice's side of the interaction, and on the right, Bob, which mirrors the windows I have open here. And here we have the toolbox, which is actually connected to the Aries Cloud agent through WebSocket. And then these two agents, once we establish a connection, which we can do that real fast, oh, there's already a connection. Didn't notice that. Hopefully that's the right one. So now we have a connection between Alice and Bob's cloud agents, and then we have Bob's toolbox on the other side. So what we've done is added the ability to send basic messages, or rather instruct the Aries cloud agent to send a basic message to one of its connections. So we can demonstrate that real fast. And here, since we're connected over WebSocket, we get in real time notifications of the receipt of our message. And we can go over and view the messages tab. And just to demonstrate one more time, the notifications, if we don't have the conversation selected, we still get a little notification to let us know that we have new messages here to read from Alice, I guess, from Bob's perspective here. And then we can obviously respond. Sorry, I can't come up with very creative messages off the top of my head, but there you go. So to talk through a little bit of what's happening. So from the toolbox, when we type in a message and hit enter, a message is being sent from the toolbox to the agent, telling the agent to tell Bob, hi. After which the agent does that, Bob's agent receives it and then sends a notification or a message via WebSocket, I should say, to Bob's toolbox saying that Alice said hi. And the way this is set up, in the case that Bob's toolbox is not actively connected over WebSocket to Bob's agent and Alice decides to send Bob hi again, the message is sent to Bob's agent and then stored on the agent until Bob's toolbox comes back online and can request from its agent any messages that it had might've received while the toolbox was not actively in use. And those messages are of course reported to the toolbox. These messages are documented inside of the Aries toolbox repository in the docs folder admin basic message. The protocol URI is actually the full GitHub URL for these actual documentation for these docs. And so the message types are actually fully resolvable at this point. So if I were to go here and type that in real fast, we've taken advantage of the fact that readmes are displayed automatically when you navigate to a folder, and this will redirect us back to that main documentation for each message type. So yeah, I think that's about everything I had to demo. Sam, did I forget anything?
The other thing that I thought was really cool, you modified it so that you could load just a portion of the plugin. Yes.
Yeah, I will go over that. So there's a number of protocol handlers inside of this that the toolbox supports and are provided through this plugin to ACAPI. They're all listed out here inside of the main README. But we've got a connections, which is the protocol, which allows us to administer connections. Static connections are similar and so on. Previously, we'd just load everything at once, but we've now made it possible to more explicitly pick and choose which protocol handlers you want to install into the agent on startup. And we've also made a couple of groupings that just seem to make sense. So a connections group provides both connections and static connections. Holder provides credential definitions, so you can query ledgers for your definitions to be able to propose a credential to an issuer. And then an issuance has everything it needs to issue credentials through the toolbox. So for example, to load the connections group and the basic message module, we can simply specify the package group connections. And similarly for the basic message, the package, and then the basic message module. So there you go. So you can now pick and choose which ones you actually need for your specific use case for the toolbox. All right. Did I miss anything else, Sam?
Nope. That was it. Any thoughts or questions?
So I understand this is just a demo and you're using ngrok to handle the tunneling, but do you imagine you're actually going to have basically open ports on a production server to handle that?
Yes. So we've actually used the same code and demonstrated it a semi-production environment just as we host an agent for the Sovereign Foundation. So the Docker setup, of course, is using ngrok for easy demonstration purposes, but you could and should be able to very easily set this up for actually running in production on a host and port and everything.
So it's worth noting that the WebSocket connection to ACAPI is not special. It's just a DIDCOM connection. So if you have an agent that can speak DIDCOM, then and you create invitations that allow the right permissions for these types of protocols to be used, then you can use it from anywhere. So there's nothing special necessarily being done for the toolbox.
And that, so the WebSocket connection is actually from the agent toolbox to the agent, but agent to agent, that's TCP?
It's whatever the agents talk. So if they can talk WebSockets, it's WebSockets, or HTTP, it's HTTP, or anything else, it's anything else. That's just completely agent-to-agent communication. And that's involved, so we show that in the picture, but it isn't really toolbox related.
Okay.
We had during our demos and training that we had used the toolbox for, the ability to ask one agent to send the other agent a message. Basic message style was a highly requested feature just to kind of help people understand how it's connected and what works. And at the time, we weren't ready to have that done yet, and we've completed it now. So that's a useful thing, in particular for demos. You can exchange credentials as well. But it is a sort of a basic thing to ensure that they're communicating. Having something like basic message is really handy for that.
I'll tack on as well. It's already listed here in the README. So if you'd like to get more in depth with it, you can. But the Docker demos are fully set up to interact with the Sovereign Staging Net for exchanging credentials. So if you load up the Alice and Bob demo, you can actually, there's a couple of outside steps you'll have to take in order to anchor a DID to the Sovereign Staging Net, but you can demonstrate writing a schema and a credential definition and exchanging credentials through the toolbox. Okay, I guess I'll call that good then.
Daniel, thank you. Any final comments before we move on to our next agenda item? Awesome. The next up is Robert is going to be talking about an adaptation of the toolbox and some other things they've done, which will prompt some cool discussions. Robert, are you ready for that?
Yep. Just let me share the screen. Okay. Hello, everyone. Before we start with the presentation, I just wanted to give you a background why we are doing it and the reasoning behind it. As you probably know already, we are coming slightly from a different angle to this, to the whole space. We are coming from the data perspective and building the overlay capture architecture, which basically define the semantic of the data and allows you to basically facilitate the unified data language, allow you to merge the data and exchange the data, transport the data in a smooth way between the different types of the systems. And obviously one of the idea which our companies has is to use vertical transportation because it's immutable. You can refer to it in a very secure way, and you can be sure that basically whatever you put in the VC will stay there, right? And then you have obviously a different protocols to exchange the VC, and the agents can talk to this kind of stuff, and the wallets can store it, and so on and so on. But as soon as you hit the real data, means the huge data sets, different types of the data, like pictures, videos, huge data sets in gigabytes or terabytes, the VC is not very useful for transportation this kind of data. And obviously there is a problem how to still use this trusted and secure way of exchanging information within the SSI space, taking into consideration those use cases with the huge data sets, right? So we compose a few tools which basically will be shown during this demo. So I just wanted to guide you through quickly. So first tool is the editor, which allows you to basically play with OCA. So ODCA previously, the overlay capture architecture. This is basically a layer structure of the data, so describing the semantic of the data. So here I have a couple of examples, which I already prepared for the demo. Here, for example, we have our audit overview schema, which we are using in one of our POC with pharma companies. Basically, this tool allows you to design drag and drop. So maybe I will show you an example. So basically you can drag and drop stuff in the context of the data structure which you want to create. You have for each item on the list, basically you have your property. If you start naming the attributes, we have a linkage to the blinding identity taxonomy, which probably you're familiar with. Which allows you to mark a PII's personal identifiable information, which later on is very useful for capturing the data and storing them. Then obviously you have a possibility to set like encoding, default values, labels, extra information, and so on and so on. So basically you can build up the whole form that way, and then the tool or the library which we prepared is parsing the OCA, which is behind here, and rendering for you the form directly in a different system. So just to give you an example of much more complex one, this audit overview, basically behind you have the overlays and the schema base, which define all those attributes and render it properly according to that what you defined, right? So for this demo, I think there is, So I prepared the driving license schema, which is exactly the same. I can show you how it's looked like in from the backend here. So here is the schema, which you probably are familiar with already. I don't know if I can zoom it in. Is it good enough to see it, the size of the font? Or? I assume yes, okay. So that's the structure of the schema base, which defines the, all the attributes and the PIIs inside. Then obviously you have the additional overlays, which basically add the coloration of the object which we're creating. For example, the human readable names for the attributes, the encoding, the format. So you can define, for example, that the date is captured with specific format. And there is always a cross-reference to the schema base. So those are linked objects. We are using currently a hash links, which I will talk a little bit more in a specific when we are linked the data to the VC. And so it means that basically you can always resolve those objects and combine them together according to your use case. And for that purpose, we created some simple ODCA repository or OCA repository, which allows you to pull out different information about different schemas. So we can, it's a basically a database behind its Elasticsearch, which allows you to index the data and basically all the attributes which you're storing there. You can think of it as a packet repository in the Linux distributions. So it's a public repository where you have immutable objects uniquely identifiable through the hash link, which is a cryptographic signature of the content behind it. So you can be sure that nobody tamper it, nobody change that, nobody modify anything. This kind of repositories can be distributed across, like there could be a public ones, it could be like within the consortium or within the company, or you could store even your, or keep your own private ones. And then based on this, we'll resolve those schema objects to be able to render a properly a load which we are attaching to the VC. So for purpose of this demo, so as you can see, this is a toolbox, Aries toolbox, which was presented by Daniel. It's a slightly different flavor of it. Basically, we change it a little bit to be able to run it within the browser. So you can host it on your own server and give access to it through the standard URL. So you don't need to install that on your machine and stuff like that. It's much easier for testing and basically creating some kind of sandboxed environments. You can hide it behind some SSO or any kind of mechanism which you have even in the company or stuff like that. So right now we'll use the standard credential exchange protocols and stuff. We have here a schema, which is a regular schema issue on the sovereign network. So here in the back, we have a VON network running, which is supporting the agents. And here the schema, basically it's a very simple one, which includes just a hash link and the additional attribute, which is called issuer. So the thing is that, so this is what we did, is that as soon as you have a hash link, the Aries toolbox can understand it and resolve what will go further on here. So as soon as you're issuing a credential like that, I have here some, here you can specify any type of a hash link. I have here an example, which basically, I think I already issued that one, so. So basically, as you, so I don't know how many people are familiar with the hash links, but you can read more about that within the draft created by Manu Sporny. It's the prefix with the schema. Then you have a resource hash, which basically it's a hash of the content. And then you have some optional metadata. And the optional metadata, currently it's defined as a JSON object, which basically has some location where you can find the data, content type, and some experimental attributes. So it's not very well defined yet, But the important thing, and this is something which I would like to point out for the further discussion, is that basically we coined something which we call decentralized resource identifier, which is very similar to the hashling, with exception of having a location. So this, what we are saying is that as soon as you deal with the data, you should never point to a location, because we don't care where the location will be. In a decentralized data economy, so in the future where everyone has own agents and basically you have a DIT communication and the whole SSI space, this what you can do is that as soon as you receive the data from someone, having just a content hash, you can ask the agent and ask for the location of the data or ask for the access to the data in any time. And since he's the owner or controller of the data, he will always know where the data will be located. And this is in the connection of the data vaults. So as soon as the agent is up and running, each agent will have some sort of the data vault. So the location for the data, huge amount of the data which are collected about the user, like a healthcare, medical records, some maybe data from the social platforms, and the agents stores them in a different location. It could be a Google Drive, Dropbox, NFS, maybe IPFS, whatever server in the basement, or maybe S3 on Amazon. It basically doesn't matter. As soon as you have that location, you can identify the content based on the hash content, which you're basically operating with. And then obviously the schema, which describes the structure of the data so you can understand it and exchange the data, merge the data and talk the data language, right? So to give you so this is the main. So here we are issuing this credential to the user. Here we have another agent running for the client. He already received the credential. And here you can see that the credential is according to the schema which we have, which is just issuer, so extra attribute which I added to show that actually you can mix stuff together. And then you have a hashing. And this what is happening here is that we have a hash of the data. So here we have, I think it's this one. Yeah. So here you can, so basically this is an example of the data vault running behind. So it's a file server, which basically serves the data for the specific agent. And here we have the data in a format of the JSON, but it could be any database, any kind of data structure. Basically, you need to have a drivers to understand it and parse it properly. The idea is that you have the attribute name and the value, and later on you build up the whole thing out of the OCA, where you have a human readable description of the attributes, you have a format of the data and all the detailed information which basically are used to capture the data, right? So here is a raw data on the data vault. And this is what is happening here. As soon as I hit the preview button, this is what is happening is that through this immutable system of the hash links, it goes to the data vault, pull the data, then from the other part of the hash link, which is a metadata, which currently we are using this experimental feature, but basically this will be replaced with another mechanism which we are working on. So you can see here is just a linkage to the data that this schema base was used to capture the data with those overlays. And the overlays are like encoding, label, and so on and so on. So here what is happening is that it goes to the OCA repository, resolve the schemas, resolve the data, render everything in a human readable way, and load the data directly into the form, right? So you can see it. And through this mechanism, the linkage of the hash links, you can verify that nobody modified those data, even though that the data comes outside of the VC. And obviously that way, you're not limited in the size of the data, you're not limited of the type of the data, you can basically attach anything to the VC and keep this chain, trusted chain. You can pass attachment, you can basically do whatever you like with it. And here is an example of, there is no resolution for that, this is just a dummy data for now, but you could imagine that you have a photo attached to your driving license, or a fingerprint, or any kind of biometrics, which could point as well to another location where the data are located. For example, the fingerprint and the photo could be hosted by the state or by, you know, another entity which basically provides those information because they are holder of that. You can link to them directly through the same mechanism. And here I wanted to specify this DRI to point it out that basically it's a counterpart of the DID. So when the DID is for identification and control, DRI is basically for the data, is for this unit of language, basically specifying a content in a immutable way. And then how you resolve that content is what I explained. In the future, we think that the best solution for that is to basically ask agent who is providing the data to resolve that for you. That way you can keep control over the access to the data. You can anytime revoke access to the data. You can see who and when actually use the data, because every time when you want to get access to the data, you have to ask for it. And an agent can verify that actually the verifiable credential was issued and it's still valid and so on and so on. So that's it from the perspective of this modification of the ARIES. This is what I wanted to add in addition is that all the stuff which we are doing here is on the GitHub. It's within our repository. Later on, I can share the link so everybody can play with it. I don't know if I have it here, if it was already moved. I think this one is the recent one. So here is an instruction about how to run this demo and explaining the concept. Basically, we are doing that because we are preparing to build up a TDA, so a trusted digital assistant, which basically deals with the identity and the data portability. We are dealing with the technologies like semantic containers as well. We're doing some proof of concept in that space, how to compose the data, to move the data outside of your agent and data vault, and so on. And everything is done under a new, or let's say a fresh organization, which we recently established. So I will use that time to pitch to you guys or just let you know that actually we are moving in that direction. We already mentioned about that thing a few times. Human Colossus Foundation, a Swiss-based foundation for decentralized data economy. And as I mentioned already about those pieces which we are working on, OCA is the one which you saw. Trusted Digital Agent is basically a kind of flavor of the toolbox extended with additional interaction with components like MSP, meaningful service provider, purpose-based consent, purpose-based services, everything around the data and enriching the data and data flows. So that's it from my side. If you have any questions, feel free. Suggestion, feedback.
So I have one. I think the idea that you could have data that you can more or less present proof of the data and without fully providing it and then supply it on demand is a really cool idea. Because that way, for example, you could have a credential contain something like a picture, and there's still dangers of hashing, for example, and it's not a perfect solution, but the ability to provide something like a hashed picture and then provide the picture later and have some level of assurance that it, you know, that's the same one is a really neat idea without having to host those resources somewhere. So it turns out that like the hash of the data is more important than where it actually is.
Exactly, because in many cases, and that was the case in the one of the POC which we are building, is that in many cases the companies they just want to be assured that the data which were checked by the auditor are correct and they are not changing, right? So they are just interested about this immutability aspect and assurance that someone check it. And actually, they don't need to have data. It's like with, you know, this zero knowledge proofs aspect that I don't care about your data. I care if it's yes or no. I care if you are above 18 or not, right? So I don't want to even see the data. But in that way, you can basically build a different use. Obviously, this is not for every use case, right? That's, I think it's super clear. There are very specific use cases which actually you can use that mechanism to, you know, even deal with a huge amount of the data, like, you know, medical records, where in many cases, like gigabytes, there is no way to fit that into VEC in any way, But still, you want to be sure that if you're transporting the data from a doctor, let's say between the countries or something, that everything is secure and actually have still control over everything which floats that direction, right? So within this mechanism, we believe that actually we can create a very nice data flows and possibility to exchange data in a secure way.
So Robert, you have some two interesting concepts here. One of them is providing a hash link of the data, which gives both the hash and a location where it can be retrieved so that it can be stored externally from the credential. And the second is just a hash of the data so that when the data, if and when the data is supplied at a secondary point in time, that you can be assured that it is the same data that was signed off by the issuer. So that there's potentially use cases for both mechanisms, and I think that's very interesting.
Correct, yeah. And obviously, and don't forget about the whole concept of the OCA, because here you can have really rich data structures which can be composed according to that how you capture the data. And imagine that this driving license, you need that in China, means that the labels, you can modify the labels without modifying the data and modifying the linkage to the trusted way how the data were captured. You can replace the label overlay, provide that in a Chinese format, and still the guy in China can be sure that this is alleged data coming from the trusted state or whatever, right? So this is a very nice way to have. So it's very 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 similar to the concept which is behind this rich schema effort, which basically allows you to extend the possibility which you can compose within the VC, but this is much more generic way, not directly related with the VC, because you can do that in any kind of system. But here we are just showing how actually you can do that through the VC without much effort. It's just basically it's happening automatically. It could be one of the plugin within your wallet or TDA, as we call it. And basically every time when you go, when you get the VC with the proper hash link, then basically you can render and basically play with it and have a human readable presentation layer of those complex structures.
So is the order of the overlays important?
No, because you're applying them according, so whatever order you will apply them, it will still work because basically there is no dependency on them. So you can basically ignore the order. Doesn't matter in that situation. And for example, this what we're doing with the OCA here, we don't have an example like this, but basically as you remember here in the tool, we have the possibility to mark the staff as a PII, personal identifiable information, right? So your wallet is able to mark those stuff, which are the sensitive information, and you should watch out on them. And for example, you could have an overlay on top of it, which comes directly from your wallet, that in case if someone will ask you for specific data, which they don't say that it's PII, but according to you, it's PII for you, you can mark it and basically be much more aware of how and what kind of data you're sharing to the credentials or things like that.
So the other comment I have is I'm intrigued by the way you've used a piece of the toolbox here. Obviously, there's no connection selector because it's only the connection to the one instance that you're serving up. But how much modification did you need to do to the code that was there in order to use it in this manner?
Not much. Obviously, most of the stuff which we did is, I mean, first of all, the modification which we did is to get rid of the Electron thing, basically the app running in the browser. So that was one thing. I don't know exactly how much code modification we did for that, but it was not much. And then another modification is basically a parser of the VC as soon as you receive it and link it with the functionality here to basically preview the stuff And there is a basically dedicated code which basically does the resolution stuff for all the pieces from the hashing. So as soon as there is an attribute within the credential, so we parse the credential, we see that there is a hash link, we display this preview button, and then basically under this preview button, there is whole logic doing everything for the staff. And obviously you could have here like a green log or something saying that, yeah, we verify that the hashes match, that the hash of the content match, that the hash of the schema and the overlays match, and everything is correct. But this is just an assumption that in case if it's not matching right now, basically it will not load in the current implementation. But there is a whole security checked on the data which is loaded here. So there is a not much modification in the sense of the whole Aries toolbox. We could say that this is like an extra extension.
Sure. Well, I hadn't imagined people using this way, but the way you show it is, I like it. And I was just curious if there's something that we can do to the toolbox code to make it easier to do that on a more regular basis, or to be an officially supported way to run the piece of it that you're running.
Yeah. I mean, basically this, what we did here, the extension is basically extension of the UI. For now, I don't think there is any mechanism allowing you to extend the UI itself. So maybe in the future, it will make sense to provide something like that, because basically we modify the code directly into the places where we need it.
So we...
There's no way to, for example, extend, for example, the presentation layer of the virtual credential, let's say, or something like that.
Yeah, so we have a way to have whole new modules, but what you're doing is you're doing something specific with credentials. And I think it's highly probable that as interesting things with credentials show up, we'll need to add a way to do exactly what you're doing in order to have UI modules that you can write that specifically relate to credentials in a pluggable manner. We haven't really got there yet. We haven't had that much happen. And so you're sort of pioneering an area here that I think we'll see a lot of action in the future.
Yeah, because the plugins right now are basically based on the, let's say, our features, right? You can extend the toolbox itself based on the features which you have. But this, what we are doing, we are extending the UI for a specific feature, right? So the credential module, right? So as soon as you're displaying it here, basically we are modifying the way how we are interpreting and how we're showing it here, right? So that's the way how we're modifying it. And having this kind of possibility to extend the UI that way, obviously that will, I don't know if it will be needed in, I don't know how many people are using Toolbox for building on top of it, but for experimenting and doing different kind of proof of concept, that's a very nice start and allows you to bootstrap very quickly with all the pieces. So yeah.
Thank you, Robert. This is fantastic. Are there any other questions or comments or anything for Robert before I move along?
Yeah, so maybe last thing from my side, because we already had a discussion quite a few weeks ago about writing down the RFC for this concept of DRI, or basically the concept of attaching to the credential, day in progress of creating that. Sorry for the delay. Recently, I had a huge load with other projects, but soon we'll have RFC as a proposition of describing why we want to have it, the argumentation behind it, and the implementation examples. And then in addition of that, this schema interoperability and how to make sure that the whatever schema you have or whatever schema you want to use, that it's a network agnostic. Because currently here, if you're issuing a VC, obviously the VC comes from the schema which was created on sovereign network. If someone is using a completely different network, he will not be able to resolve the schema directly from the sovereign network maybe, or maybe he will not be able to create the schema on the sovereign network. So there needs to be a mechanism how to basically link those stuff. And obviously, if the schema is on a different networks, then it probably will have a different structure, different semantics or whatever. And as well, there will be a challenge how to combine those stuff. And we are working on that based on the OCA, how to propose the solution for it. And that will be as well a proposition in the form of the RFC to discuss within the community and see how we can actually solve those issues. Okay, good. Then thank you very much.
Thank you, Robert, for your effort in preparing and sharing that with us. That's super, super interesting. And I know it gave me some ideas. The next section on the agenda, we haven't done this in a little while, and I think it's a useful thing to do. As we work together as a community, there's those of us that generally organize this call. Stephen Curran and I usually do that. And there's other things that we do in the community. And I was looking for feedback on what we're doing and any adjustments that we need to make in order to better serve the needs of the community, or if there's needs that we're unaware of. And that's the kind of feedback we're looking for. It can be related to this call or stuff generally, but I'm curious if anyone has comments or feedback on what's happening, what we need to be doing, adjustments that would help us to better pursue the work that we're all engaged in.
One thing that I get asked for a lot is, what's the project roadmap? Now, obviously, we always have the discussion of it's ready when it's ready, and it's all about community volunteer work. But one thing that we ought to be doing, at least on a quarterly basis, is we ought to be planning what we think is going to happen in the next 6 months or so, with the idea that it'll help us coordinate resourcing things that are the most important between different companies and teams.
And maybe one comment from my side, and this is as well some kind of feedback which I got from different companies which we are working with. In many cases, obviously the whole effort which is happening in Ares and the whole Hyperledger community and stuff, it's brilliant and it's amazing progress. But companies expect to have much more kind of product tailored solutions. Means that obviously you can say that, yeah, you can use SSI for a different whatever, right? Or you can use Ares toolbox or agent for whatever, right? And they having a problem to understand how to apply that to their products, right? Means that there's even from the perspective of the development, you can see there is a lot of features of which the community is working on, but I don't think that they are driven by the business and the business requirements and the product requirements. They are much more in the context of, okay, I need that, I like it, I build it, right? And then in many cases, a lot of companies, they are in a kind of, okay, then we'll wait until it will be ready. And they're not even diving into the topic. It's basically, it seems that it's too complex to them or too hard for them to relate to the stuff which is happening within those communities.
Robert, I'm trying to come up with the right words to summarize what you just said, and I'm struggling a little bit.
I don't know if it's this product-driven development is a good way to phrase it, but something which basically let the businesses better understand what is happening within the community. Because I bet if any company which I know will join these discussions or join any call of Ares or just to try to figure out what is happening, they will be lost. They obviously, that's not for them, right? But they know that they need to move on with SSI, with decentralized data economy, with all the pieces which are floating around within the community, but they're missing some kind of guidelines. And one of the way to address that problem is as well as the Human Colossus Foundation, where we're actually planning to connect and create a synergy behind all those efforts, because obviously it's not one network, it's not one tool. There is tons of tools and tons of networks which we need to combine together to make sure make sure that everything works together. So I don't know if there is already any effort to drive the businesses in that direction. I know that Evernym is doing that, but obviously this is like on the business side, but as a community, there is not much, you know, in this open doors where everybody can come and basically try it out. So
we don't really have a good center of communication for businesses. I know of lots of parties that are all directly pursuing their own roadmaps and interests that are very, very business related. This is, there's fewer of us that are floating around just generally interested, and most of the companies that are involved are in a particular space. And BCGov, for example, is building stuff specifically for the things they're trying to do with their government, right, in that particular vertical. We have Evernym, we have Matter, we have Street Cred, and there's more that I'm not mentioning specifically. So I know that there are interests around that, but what we don't do, I think that you're highlighting very well, is if you just show up to the Aries community generally, it's hard to figure out from a business perspective what's going on or what the options are. And that's a little bit hard to do well, because what we don't want to do is necessarily compete for within the community for visibility of what's going on. But on the other hand, it's really nice if someone can say, hey, what are the options? And are there any vendors that can make this easier for me? And we don't do a great job of communicating at that level, which I think we could definitely do better on. Other feedback?
Well, I think it's just be careful about antitrust issues and calls like this. You can't be funneling people to all your one solution.
Of course, right? And that's why it's a little bit hard. But on the other hand, it would be, we could do a better job at general business communication about what the state of the work are, what open source projects there are, et cetera. And, you know, we've got to find out the right way, but it would be helpful to be able to help people arriving to understand which vendors are in the space. We don't want antitrust issues, and that's why we have to be very careful about how we do that particular thing. But even separate from that, we can talk at a much better level about what exists in the community, even just open source projects and what state they're in and what opportunities there are. I mean, I think if someone shows up and they're able to find some open source, you know, some Docker demos, base demos of some open source stuff that kind of helps you demonstrate that, that's useful. That's a way to help them get started. And that doesn't exist in any particular antitrust issues.
We even point out there is a solutions showcase at Hyperledger where if you have products or things that you're building that help, you know, use or consume the open source code that happens at Hyperledger, there's, you know, places for those sponsored members or for those members of Hyperledger to showcase that work. And we'd like to be able to point at those things when people ask us those kinds of questions.
Exactly. This is what, if there is already a showcase thing within that space somewhere, I'm not aware of that. This is why I'm asking, because obviously if someone will came and ask, okay, SSI, I want to use it. I want to use this concept of the agents. I want to deploy it. I want to have a wallet, whatever. Then obviously he knows a little bit about the space because he learned somewhere on the conference and stuff like that, but he don't know exactly how to apply it to his specific business case, right? So if he will be able to compare that with existing cases where he can refer to it, and even, you know, knowing the use case, and you can basically try to get in contact with the companies who actually did that and figure out more and find the vendors and so on. So we don't need to like advise that go there to, you know, if you want to build a wallet, go to this company. No, we're just saying that if you want to have identity solution in that and that way, go here. If you want to have a VC registration or trusted kind of data transportation, take a look on those cases and so on. So like a specific generic cases which were already implemented, and you can have a good overview on that, what the community is doing, right?
I was also going to say, Sam, that we've been inviting a few people from outside the community to present things in the semantics work group. So things like the new Kantara receipt spec and semantic containers and kind of some new technology which might be very important to dovetail in with some of the SSI stuff. So if there's if anybody in the community comes across a pretty cool technology that and they want to introduce that technology into some of the SSI experts, then the semantics group's quite a nice a soft way in. And then if we need to escalate it beyond that, then we'd push them towards the Aries group.
We don't have that many presentations. We have demos here and there, but they're generally from inside the community. And having some presentations from outside, I think, would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Especially that the project is growing and is getting more and more complex, and you start interacting with different entities and different systems from outside of the community, and you need to understand what are the requirements of those endpoints which you are interacting with to actually get it right or get it better, right? Because if everything will be encapsulated within the community, then it will be like locked, and maybe it will be harder for others to actually adapt it for the specific use cases because they are not able to provide a feedback about their requirements.
As far as community topics or community the call agendas go, we've mostly been following sort of the area of community attention. If there's lots of activity in an area, we try to focus on that. And I feel like we could be a little more intentional about the topics we spend time on. What types of things have we not been spending time on the community calls that we should do more of?
Well, I think one thing that's missing is cross-pollination with diff and W3C.
One of the ongoing efforts that's happening even between diff and W3C is this sort of data store issue. And I find myself frequently defending that the Aries community in particular doesn't have a horse in the data store race. They're not talking about key storage so much, they're secret storage, they're talking about other types of assets, but that we care. And so having some presentation from them, I think could be really useful. And from what some of the other parties are working on, I think that could be really helpful.
I think not only just the encrypted data stores, but also just interoperability between the different DID methods for a VC. Because I'm on a lot of these calls and there's a big gap presently.
I agree, but I think there are outstanding efforts that are starting to bridge that. We could definitely be better, but Ori has been doing a fantastic job setting up some resources at DIF, unblocking things like and proving interoperability across DID methods by like an interop suite. He's got a test report that he can run across DID methods now that enables us to check whether or not the variety of different supported DIDs on the Universal Resolver are actually supported by the JSON-LE context. So I agree with you that it could be better, but there are efforts now that I think are starting to close that gap.
Great. I'd love to see him.
Well, and I'd love to hear from him too, right? Bringing awareness around, I think would be helpful there. That's an excellent suggestion.
So I get more. No one else has any. So the other thing would be certainly with W3C is the JSON-LD and how that is going to interop with VCs from Aries.
And the other thing I think we should mention here is we should be making really extensive use of the implementers call that we have on Thursday for things that are kind of cross-project concerns or cross concerns about protocol interoperability. You know, I think there's a lot of opportunity to talk about IPLD and some of the other things that are, they may not be directly related to what Aries is building right now, but they could be related sometime soon. And it'd be a good idea to bring some of those topics into the implementers call so that people are kind of aware of what those feature sets are and where that overlap might happen.
Yeah, so I'm working on the draft for the W3C spec for the CBOR section. And I need to finish writing it. And I think I'm going to finish writing it when I'm at the rebooting Web of Trust. And I'll have it done. That'll be the middle of March. And I'll be afterwards be happy to present it. Because that basically is IPLD. Underneath the cover is CBOR.
Cool. Sam, is that something we can take to Steve and see if we can get some of those things on the implementers call agenda if you think that there's overlap there?
I think there definitely can be. That call typically has a smaller audience, and some of that may be calendar logistical issues. But some of these topics I think are more broadly interesting than just the Aries call, and so that would be a good venue for that, for those reviews and issues. We can also, you know, point to recordings and if we have upcoming agendas, we can help folks in this call understand kind of what's being covered elsewhere as well. That would be helpful. Just like to point out, this is like our best exercise of approaching a full Nathan that we've had in quite a long time.
I think we're all getting an expert at the silence. We've all learned from Nathan.
So if you happen to think of stuff, please reach out and let us know, either publicly or privately, either one. I'd love to find better ways to serve the community and help organize efforts that will benefit us all as we're all seeking to do pretty excellent stuff. We don't need to drag this out unnecessarily. I appreciate the feedback and look forward to continuing interactions and all the things that we're doing. Part of me, as I see progress happen, you know, part of me is frustrated that we're not making progress faster. And the other part of me is so excited about the progress that we are making. And often that's because we're making progress in ways that I didn't anticipate. And so seeing that all come together is a really powerful thing. So I appreciate all of your involvement. I appreciate you being here and being involved in all the things that you do. Have yourself a fantastic week. We will see you next week then. And please find a minute if you can here and there to be active on the RocketChat channels and reviewing PRs and issues as we move the work forward. Thanks everybody for coming and have a great week.
Thanks, Sam.
Thanks everybody.
Bye. Thanks guys.
Thanks guys. Bye.